98.1. It's Maryland Morning. Thanks for being with us, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. You know, in a severe thunderstorm, you might hear someone say, it's raining cats and dogs. Well, in the United States, even in the sunniest of weather, it really is raining cats and dogs. More homes in the United States have cats and dogs than have kids. There are more than four times as many feline and canine residents of American homes than there were in the 1960s. Nearly 150 million, one of them for every two of us. In a new book, the Baltimore-based writer David Grimm takes a look at how the status of our animals in our homes and in our society has changed over time. It's called Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. And David Grimm joins me this morning in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a terrific book. It's a really interesting read. One of the points you make early on is that cats and dogs are kind of in a category by themselves, as opposed to horses and birds and fish. Why is that?
Well, it's just in terms of not only the amount of money we spend on them. We're projected to spend $60 billion on our pets this year, which trumps the economies of about half the world's countries. But so in our homes, we've certainly singled out these animals more than any other pet. In fact, five times more homes have cats and dogs than have any other pet combined. So in our homes, we've definitely embraced them as members of the family. But also what I want to get into the book is also in the eyes of the law, these two pets have more rights and protections than any other animal in the country. There's felony anti-cruelty laws in every state that protect cats and dogs. Fines can be up to 10 years in prison and $125,000 in fines. Cats and dogs can inherit money, which they couldn't do about 15 years ago. And there are emotional distress damages now that owners can qualify for in some courts, where if somebody kills your cat or a dog or severely injures them, you can get sometimes up to tens of thousands of dollars. And typically those damages are only available for spouses or children. Cats and dogs have even been the subject of custody battles.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot of things going on around these two animals that just shows what a remarkable status they've achieved in our society.
I mean, you trace this history, you know, to ancient times through the present, but cats and dogs have always seemed to have some sort of elevated status in many societies. I mean, even in the 19th century, you talk about how Charles Darwin thought that dogs were capable of abstract thought and even morality and language. So people have always attributed, quite a few... talents to dogs and cats.
Yeah, they've kind of been on this roller coaster ride. Dogs were the very first thing we ever domesticated. They probably came into our society somewhere between 15 and 30,000 years ago. Cats about 10,000 years ago. And at first, they weren't really like the family members we see them as today. They were kind of co-workers. Dogs helped us hunt and herd, and cats protected our crops. And it was a very sort of tit-for-tat relationship. You do this for me, and I'll do this for you. There wasn't a whole lot of thinking about pets or companions. And that's sort of more of a recent phenomenon. In the Middle Ages, though, cats and dogs, it wasn't a great time to be anybody in the Middle Ages, but it wasn't a great time to be a cat or a dog. They were blamed for spreading plague and death and disease. And it's really only been in the last 150 years or so where they really started to become companions and then bona fide family members.
So the book sort of traces the evolution of dogs and cats from objects to then personal property, objects that could be owned, to family members, as you say, and then to finally even to perhaps legal citizens, which is a fascinating evolution. This notion of pets as part of the family. I'm a dog owner. You're a cat owner. We learn in the book. This part of the family, it's not just a personal descriptor. I mean, it's becoming a legal definition.
That's right. And what's really fascinating, speaking of a roller coaster ride, 100 years ago, cats and dogs weren't even property. I talk about one of my favorite anecdotes in the book is this Baltimore case from 1894 that was reported in The Sun, where in the Canton neighborhood, a man actually sneaks into a woman's yard, steals her cat. He's brought before a judge, and the judge can't charge him for a crime because cats and dogs at the time were not considered property. They were considered so legally worthless that they weren't even considered property. So the judge had to let the man go. That's obviously changed as pets became members of our family. They became property. And I argue in the book, they're the most valuable animal property or the most valuable animals in the country. But yeah, that line is now starting to blur even between property and person. Cats and dogs are technically property, but with all these things like custody cases and emotional distress damages and felony anti-cruelty laws, cats and dogs more than any other animal are really blurring that line between property in person, an animal in person, not just in our homes, but also in the courts.
Let's talk a little bit about Henry Berg, who's the founder of the ASPCA, the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals in New York. He did this in the middle of the 1800s. It's his work that really started establishing this notion that, you know, dogs and cats were a value in some way.
That's right. And actually, his original focus was on horses. Horses were horribly treated in the turn of the 20th century in New York. Before automobiles, the horses were run to death on the streets. And so his original concern came from horses, and that was when really a lot of his primary efforts with the ASPCA. They actually had their own police force on the New York streets that would bus people that were committing animal cruelty. And soon after he died, when the horses started to disappear because the automobile came in, then the residents of New York noticed this big problem with homeless cats and dogs. They were dying on the streets. They were being rounded up and very cruelly executed by pounds at the time. And so the ASPCA stepped in, and what was once a mission to protect horses became a mission really to protect cats and dogs. And that still really remains their primary mission today.
And it's the irony that you point out is that they're legally protected before they were even really recognized as things of personal value.
That's right. A lot of this stuff happened before cats and dogs were considered legal property. When they were considered legally worthless, you could steal a cat or a dog, you could kill a cat or a dog, nothing would happen to you. But if you were cruel to a cat or a dog, then you might get punished. And it was a misdemeanor at the time. Now it's a felony, which just shows, again, how the status of these animals has evolved.
David Grimm's new book is called Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. You talk about a court case, custody. Stanley and Linda Perkins had a dog that they loved very much. They didn't, however, end up loving each other all that much, so they divorced. And they ended up spending $146,000 in legal fees to determine the custody of their dog. Was it a dog or a cat?
It was a dog. It was a dog named Gigi. I think it was may have been a greyhound mix. This was in San Diego in around 2000. And it was, I think, and it may remain the most expensive pet custody battle in U.S. history. And what's really fascinating about a lot of these custody battles, and they've become a lot more common even since then, is that you'll often have a judge saying, okay, the man and the woman are fighting over the dog or cat, and I'm going to decide what is in the best interest of this animal. What home would the cat be happiest in? What home would the dog be happiest in? Kind of like you would do for human children. So that's a really remarkable thing, because you wouldn't do that for a toaster. You wouldn't say, what home would the toaster be happiest in? So again, it's a recognition that these animals aren't just property, that they really are family members.
Leona Helmsley in 2007 rather famously left about $12 million to her dog. The moral implications of that are something we'll discuss at another time. But even before that, in 1968, a woman named Thelma Russell left her estate to a friend and her dog, and it was upheld. I mean, this is the point when pets are now starting to be seen as people?
Right. So before 2000, it wasn't actually legal to leave money to animals, including cats or dogs. Sometimes judges would allow it, as in the case that you mentioned. But after 2000, something was adopted called the Uniform Trust Code, which a lot of states, in fact, the majority of states now have versions of, which does allow you to leave money to cats and dogs and actually other animals as well. And it's really remarkable because technically, cats and dogs are still property, and money is property. So property shouldn't be able to inherit property. And this sort of violates hundreds of years of property law. But it's a law now in most states that you can leave money to your animals. And again, you know, it just really shows that when owners are really treating their pets like children, they're saying, if I die, I want somebody to be able to take care of my cat or my dog. I want to be able to leave money for them. And the law is upholding that.
There was even one case when a person died, and in her will, she said that the dog had to be euthanized as well. And somebody decided to adopt the dog, and that was taken to court because it was going against the wishes of the person who had deceased.
That's right. There was a case in California. This woman, this was before the Uniform Trust Code, so she was worried that the dog would sort of rot away in a shelter. And she's like, if I die, I want my dog to be euthanized. But remarkably, the state actually stepped in and passed a law specifically for this dog, to save this dog, and the dog ended up being rescued and going to another home.
There are groups like the Animal Legal Defense Fund that you write about, another called the Attorneys for Animal Rights, and they contend in part that to discriminate against animals based solely on their species is as indefensible as discriminating against somebody based on his or her race.
Yeah, I wanted to get into this idea in the book, and there are definitely groups out there that talk about giving animals more rights. And they sort of struggle with this idea, well, what do rights mean and how do we take something from the property status and give it rights? And so they look back at American history and they look at sort of what we've done in our past. Now, I've talked to people on the other side of that as well who think that's, you know, that's a very wrong way to go about it, that's very offensive. And obviously, I don't take a side either way. I'm a journalist, but I really wanted to profile people on both sides of that debate because this idea of giving rights to animals is a very contentious idea. And though it sounds like a great thing for the law to start considering our animals maybe a little bit more like people, there are groups like veterinarians that worried about getting slapped with large malpractice lawsuits if judges start considering animals like children, which has already started to happen. There are groups that worry that if we become more like legal guardians of our pets instead of owners, then what happens if you don't spring for that $2,000 chemotherapy for your cat or you don't walk your dog three times a day? Could some sort of pet protective services show up at your house and take your pet away? So there's some very strong voices on both sides of this evolving legal status for pets.
Yeah, one of your chapter titles is The Perils of Personhood.
That's right.
It's not all an upside for the dogs or for the owners or the people who take care of them.
Right. In fact, there's been cases where animals, in fact, especially pit bulls, have actually been put on trial. And I talk about a case in the court where a pit bull was actually assigned a lawyer. The pit bull was essentially on death row in a shelter in Georgia about to be given the equivalent of a lethal injection. And a judge gave the dog a lawyer. The lawyer successfully argued for the dog's freedom. The dog's now living in a sanctuary in New York.
And of course, pit bulls were very much in the news in the last couple of years, including this last session of the Maryland legislature, where a determination that pit bulls were inherently dangerous was essentially overturned by legislators in Annapolis. Do you see that kind of thing happening other places in the country as well?
We are starting to see that reversed. I it was nice that I was in Baltimore because I really got to talk to a lot of pit bull folks and really sort of see how that whole situation is evolving. And we are starting to see, the Maryland decision was just the latest. The reversal of the Supreme Court decision, which is we're starting to see a little bit more openness that these dogs are not inherently dangerous, that that a lot of times the problem was with the owner and not with the dog itself. And we've seen a lot of states around the country reverse these bans or these severe restrictions they've had on pit bulls.
You talked to a number of experts throughout the book. One of them is a guy in Indiana, I think his name is David Favre.
Yeah.
He's an expert on animal law. He actually advocates for the banning of the sale of cats and dogs. Are there other people who ascribe to that as well?
Well, he's basically looking for a middle ground because there's some people that's saying we should give cats and dogs lots of rights and some people saying that we shouldn't give these animals any rights. And so he's kind of looking for a middle ground to have them treated a little bit more like children. But one of his things is we shouldn't be able to buy and sell cats and dogs. If we really want to view them as children or members of the family, you would never buy or sell a member of the family. So he'd really like to see a day where we're just adopting cats and dogs, where there's assurances made that they're going to good homes, where they're not going to be abused. And again, his focus isn't really so much on rights. It's about really protecting these animals, valuing them legally, the same way we value them in our homes.
Well, David Grimm, it's a fascinating read. Thanks so much for coming. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
David Grimm, the book is called Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. David Grimm will talk about his book Thursday night at Breathe Books in Hamden. The event starts at 6:30, and we've got a link to more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. We'll also have more of our conversation. That's it for us this morning. Tomorrow, a conversation with Maren Alsop of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra about the concerts that she's conducting this weekend with the BSO and the Baltimore Choral Arts Society. I hope you can join us tomorrow morning on Maryland Morning. Until then, I'm Tom Hall. For our producers, Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay, and for Sheila and Nathan, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great day.